Blog Talk Radio.
From the air?
Hey, it's Jordan Melfi calling in.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you could join us.
Absolutely. Well, my pleasure.
All right. Actually, we have a few callers on the line already, so I'm going to give them the first option. Actually, maybe MJ, if you'd like to go first. MJ is calling from Australia. And it is actually her birthday today.
Oh.
Well, happy birthday. How old are you today?
27.
27?
Yes.
Wow.
I know I sound about 7, but it's 27.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Of course. So what's up?
Okay, I better let you guys talk, though. I just wanted to say that I'm going to the gala, and everyone should go.
No problem. Did you have a question for Jordan while you have a chance?
Did you know that you have a huge international following? I'm part of an Australian Moonlight website, so.
No, but I'm slowly learning that by doing the Moonlight Radio last week, and this is Moonlight Buzzwire Radio. Did I have that right?
Yes.
Right.
Very good.
Yeah. Oh no, but I'm slowly learning that over the course of these two experiences, and it's really amazing and unbelievably flattering and so exciting that people were so in love with the show and attached to the show and invested in those characters and what we're creating. It makes it all worth it. So, no,
I'm really super
happy to hear that.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay, I do have another question. Do you really know how to cook a chicken dish?
I can cook many chicken dishes. I don't know if I'd get as flustered about it as maybe Josh did. Although, as I said last week, with that scene where it was pointed out to me that sort of became a thing associated with that character. You know, I think it was more about what was going on with him and Beth. It wasn't really about the chicken. But
that's important too.
Say that again?
That's important too.
It's absolutely important. Absolutely important. I've cooked my fair share of chicken dishes, I guess.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Bye, guys.
And MJ, have
Happy
a great
birthday.
Birthday.
Oh, thank you. Bye. Bye, Nikki.
Bye.
Okay, and I also have Nikki on the line. Nikki, did you have a question for Josh?
I'm sorry
for Jordan. I apologize.
That's okay.
Well, unfortunately, I missed last time you were on, so I'm sure somebody probably asked already. But
no,
so what can what can we?
Of,
yep.
For lap. No, no worries.
What can we look forward to seeing you in next? What's next for you?
I'll say that again. I don't know if you have how many listeners are overlapped between last week's show and your show, but I hope I'll try and keep it fresh and interesting and not repeat myself too much. But anyway, that said, next I'll be back on Entourage, which I've been working on for a number of seasons, actually since the end of the very first season, which is a show on HBO that I've had the absolute privilege of being a part of the past 4 years or so. And that new season, which is actually season 5, starts in September. And I'm back for season 5, and I got a couple of really great episodes that are really fun and really cool. And I don't know if you know the show or how closely you watch it, but there's a rivalry, a sort of used to be love, now it's bitter hate relationship between Jeremy Piven's character and mine, and there's some really great stuff coming up this season. So that's up in September, and the season starts, I think, on September 7th. As I said last time, there's an off-Broadway show that I'm really interested in doing. That's a possibility in the next couple months. There's a movie in New York that I might go shoot next month. And another movie in shoots in New Mexico that I might do the month after that. So a couple of features coming up, and again, Entourage starting in September. So that's what's going up, coming up immediately.
Very cool. Well, I'll be sure to plug that on the site so everybody knows to tune in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a really great season. It's going to be a really fun, cool season.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
Go. Absolutely.
So, when they decided that Josh was going to leave the mortal coil, how did they go about telling you? Did you get the script and you're like, crap, or, you know, did they tell you ahead of time? I mean, how did that, did they know, like, you know, 5 or 6 episodes beforehand, or was it, you know, spur of the moment type thing?
Well, actually, somewhere in between, at a certain point, you know, I sort of knew kind of what might happen, as I had conversations with the producers. But actually, believe it or not, it wasn't really until I read the script for episode 11, which was Love Lasts Forever, which was, the episode where Josh dies, that I really knew the true fate, believe it or not. And so, actually, I feel like I probably had the same experience that all of you guys had watching it as I was reading the script, because I didn't know what was going to happen. And I got to the end, and I was reading, and I was sort of like, turn him. So, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't really know until that moment exactly how what was going to go down. But as I said last time, it's all a part of, the show, and I was more than happy to sort of serve that purpose in terms of the bigger story. That's kind of how I found out.
Cool. So, but you would have liked to have seen Josh turn, huh?
Well, no, I mean, I guess what I meant was that I was as caught up in the sort of emotion and sort of drama of it all as I think hopefully the audience was as I read it. So, because I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. So that's what I meant. But, you know, as I said last time, you know, if Josh had been turned, that would have opened up a whole host of possibilities and interesting storylines and other, you know, drama. So they were all interesting, dramatic ways to go.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, I'm going to let some other people get to you.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on, RJ.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for calling in, Nikki. You have a good night.
Thanks.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Okay, we do have another caller waiting, so I will bring them on. One moment. 832, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Melinda from Texas.
Hey, Melinda.
Hey, what's up, Melinda?
Jordan, we chose to listen to you over watching Michael Phelps.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what to say about that.
Well, it shows you where our priorities are. But my question is... your death scene in Love Lasts Forever was so moving, and one reason is because it was so realistic. Can you describe for us how the special effects were used to show the bullet holes and the blood from when you were shot?
Absolutely. There's some really great, talented effects guys that were part of Moonlight, and it was sort of a rig that actually, the most sort of interesting, dramatic part of the whole process was that the entire front of my body, the entire chest was fake. Actually, wasn't my chest you were seeing in the episode. They made a mold of my body, and they, all of that was this sort of latex rubber thing, which they essentially glued to the front of my body.
Wow.
I got there, I think that day we shot that scene, I got there, I want to say maybe 3:30 in the morning, 4 in the morning. I mean, hours and hours and hours before everybody else, and just sat in the chair. And I'm sure everyone's heard these stories of going through hours and hours of makeup. But, as they slowly and methodically glued this giant front torso to the front of my body, and that's how they were able to do the effects of cutting open my stomach and all the kinds of things that you saw in the episode. There were other some effects guys that then rigged these tubes that went, you know, up my leg and underneath that chest plate where they could pump blood, you know, coming out of the holes that they and the incisions they made in that latex piece. So it was actually a really involved process, but I think ultimately it really paid off. But it was a long and intense and arduous shoot. We shot, you know, hours and hours and hours for, you know, 5 to 10 minutes worth of screen time. I probably laid on that ground in that scene for 12 hours shooting that scene. So ultimately, it all paid off, and it was all worth it because people seemed to respond the way you did, which, again, like
yes.
It makes it all worth it.
That's just amazing. And how about when the bullets actually came out of your body and then the blood spurted out? Did they use caps or something to make it appear your clothes blew out? Or
yes, that was part of this whole. I don't know the physics of it. I don't actually know the details of how it works, but some sort of explosive. It's basically like a little. Not the right word is, but it's like a little gunpowder, you know, explosion that they can set off by remote. It's the wherever they place them on your body, there's a wire that runs down to a guy who's holding a little trigger, and when the moment's right, they fire them, and it's a little explosion. It's a little cap that happens, and it feels like you feel it, but it's, you know, it's not painful, but you definitely feel it. I don't know, maybe getting shot by a paintball or something like that. But it's
mm-hmm.
a little mini explosion that happens underneath, and they would they pack it with whatever that you know, fake blood stuff is that they use, and it explodes.
Well, that's just amazing. Thank you for explaining all that. I appreciate it.
I hope I did an okay job of trying to break it down.
Oh, yes, you did. Thank you, and best of luck to you in the future. We'll be keeping up with you, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye from me.
All right.
Bye.
Have a good night. Such interesting questions.
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Well, I have a few questions, if you would indulge me.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Now, first, and I do apologize if I call you Josh, you did such a convincing job as Josh that obviously I've never met you, so that's what I know you as. So I apologize if I get your name mixed up.
I'm not offended.
No, it's not very professional of me, though.
That's fine.
Okay, I will soldier on. All right, what I did want to know was when you were a film student, did you have any acting training, or was that something that you pursued separately or at a later date?
I did have some training because I was heavily involved with the theater department at my university when I was in school. But the two departments, you know, the film department and the theater department, were really pretty separate entities.
Right.
And I sort of bounced back and forth between the two of them because I was an actor, but I was also, you know, a film student and a director, and was shooting and directing my films. And so I sort of meshed it all together, and it all culminated in my senior year when I was directing my thesis film, and I was acting in it and directing. So yeah, I did have some training, and I started when I was younger, when I was a kid, and it was just something that I always wanted to do, something that I always loved. I was obsessed with movies, I was obsessed with acting, and I was always shooting films when I was a kid, and so, you know, it was always a part of me, and was able to kind of study a little when I was in school, and then just began my career when I finished and got back to L.A.
Oh, fantastic. Now, that thesis film, was that ever shown publicly? Is that something that you still have?
Yeah, it's something that I still have. I haven't looked at it in quite a while, but it was something that I was very, very proud of at the time. You know, it was probably at the time, you know, the most intense, the most stressful, the biggest undertaking I'd ever... I'd ever endeavored to accomplish, and you know, something I still have and was very proud of. And it actually, believe it or not, was one of the things that really got me started when I finished school and got back to Los Angeles. Is that film, because I happened to play the lead in it, was seen by some people and got passed around a little bit, and actually got me picked up by my first manager, and that led me to, you know, some of my first agents, and then, you know, I started working it on from there. So it actually was quite helpful in the beginning, the very beginning of my career.
Oh, fantastic. And yeah. That really is quite an accomplishment to actually do something like that and complete it.
Well, it was in the context of school, so it's...
Oh, but even so, I mean, I tip my hat to you. That's quite an undertaking.
Wow, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, how long between being cast as Josh and when you actually started, like, joined the set and started filming?
Right away.
Oh, really?
Right away. The story of it personally for me is really a great story, just because that summer before I actually was cast in the show, I had been traveling Europe. I had been backpacking around Europe by myself for about 5-6 weeks, and had some unbelievable experiences and some really met so many wonderful people, and had sort of one of those life-changing experiences, and had this epic final day where I started the day in Zurich, and I made my way to Paris, and then from Paris flew to New York and slept overnight in the airport, and you know, flew from New York to L.A. Mm-hmm. And the morning I got back, that I landed in L.A., I stepped off the plane and went home, changed, and went straight to the audition for Moonlight.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know what day it was, I didn't know what week it was, I didn't know what was going on, but ended up there and meeting with the producers and Fred Toy, who directed my first episode, and was cast. And so it was this sort of whirlwind experience, but was cast, and I think it couldn't have been but maybe a couple days later that I was shooting my first episode, which was the second episode of the show. And shot everything, you know, all in one giant night, you know, for that first episode.
Okay, well, that leads into my next question. I was wondering that, you know, once you got the role, as far as preparation for the role, you know, did you get the opportunity to meet Sophia first and share, like, common history of the characters or anything like that, or was it just, boom, straight into it?
Boom, straight into it.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it really was. Particularly with television, and specifically when you come on in the way that I came on in the second episode, and then from then on, you don't get a lot of time.
Right.
You're kind of just thrust in, and you might, depending on who you're working with, might have some time to sort of sit and try and figure some stuff out and go over some stuff, but you know. The time crunch on network television is so intense, and it's so short because you just have to keep, you know, moving forward and knocking out those episodes because they, you know, they're constantly airing. You just have to keep moving, and you don't have the luxury of rehearsals and really sitting and figuring stuff out. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, like I was saying last week, I came in, and the very first scene we shot was Sophia and I in bed. I mean, so it was sort of a, hey, how are you?
Nice.
Boom. in the bed. And so the only thing that we really got to talk about, you know, in that brief little time that we had was just sort of figuring out how long they'd been together, you know, where their relationship was when the audience meets them together.
Right, yeah, because that's what I was wondering about. How
you
figure that out.
Vital.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's the most important question, and particularly for us, you know, playing those, we need to know, you know, who they are and where they are in their relationship, so that all these things that are happening to them is reflected by, you know, how two people who've been together for a certain amount of time might react, how close they are, how long they've been together, how much history they have together, because you kind of start off, boom, you know, mixing the picture, and you know, how are they going to deal with it, and how is it going to, you know, be reflected in their relationship? So, so it's a combination of us kind of figuring that out together and creating it for ourselves, and kind of gauging gauging that off of what clues we get from the scripts.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I guess Sophia had a little bit more time to prepare than you did. So did you discover that she had some, like, preconceived notions of, or, like, had an idea of what she thought her relationship was, like, her character's relationship was with Josh? Or it just sort of came together, like an amalgamation of the two?
You know, I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I don't know if I can speak for Sophia. I know that she, you know, every actor brings, you know, their ideas and
sure.
their take on things to the role. And so, and that's what makes things interesting and specific, is that you have, you know, every actor has a different take on things. So I can't speak for exactly what she might have been thinking, but I do know that, you know, she saw it as very much kind of a developing love story between her and Nick, and that was the central point in the plot of the show. And so, you know, my fight to sort of stay in the circle and my fight, you know, to stay with her, I think fit in quite nicely with what she brought to it.
Right. Now, were you familiar with any of the Moonlight cast members when you joined Moonlight?
No. I was. Everyone was brand new.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but it became. But you know, when you work that intensely with people, you know, those many hours every day, and you know, you're just sort of, you spend almost more time on the set than you do at home.
Oh,
and so. You know, the people, you become close and you know, you sort of become like a family over time. You know, certainly Alex and Sophia more than anyone, because they, you know, they were there more than anyone. But
right.
It's just one of those things, whether you're doing a play or you're doing a television show, it's such an intense experience. And, you know, there's this magic created when you're really discovering and you're really finding stuff and you're really, you know, searching for a truth. In a scene, and when you find it, it's really magical, and you know, that's why it's such an addictive and you know, amazing experience.
Yeah, and that really came through, and I think that's why so many people enjoyed it, and so many people were so sad when it wasn't renewed, and why so many people have been passionate about the show. There have been so many fans who said, "I have never written into a network before. I have never joined any kind of, you know, online fan forum for a show. I've never been this disappointed or upset with the network for not renewing. But for Moonlight, that's how I feel." So it's certainly been interesting. And I would count myself amongst that group of people who you know, other shows I've been, you know, upset or disappointed, but I haven't, you know, been proactive in any way about it. So Moonlight was a real surprise, a pleasant one.
Well, as I said before, that's why we do it, and it makes it all worth it. And when people respond to your work, it just, again, it's for the audience, and for the audience for you to feel that way, and for the audience to feel that way, it's what it's all about. So it means everything.
Yeah, actually, I'm just looking in the web chat right now, because we do have that running while the show is on. And Wild Queen said, "I miss the magic." I think that just sums it up.
Well, that's the best kind of thing to hear.
What was so impressive about the show, apart from the fact it had that whole sort of noir feeling about it, was the attention to detail.
Yeah.
That was just everything about it was.
It needed to, you know, it was both playing on an established mythology of vampires, and also playing off of it,
right.
You know, and creating new variations, and that's what both made it fun and interesting, and the attention to the kind of, I mean, at least certain details that you're describing, where, you know, certain plots. Certain things happen in the show, and they're able to justify them, because they're really defining the rules of the universe, you know, And that's what made it fun, is that, you know, creating new variations on the rules of vampires and that kind of thing really make the universe in which the show is taking place rich and interesting and you know, filled by characters that you understand, and you understand what's, and once you define those rules, then you understand what the stakes are.
Right.
And that's, and I think when a show does that, that's what makes it exciting and dramatic, because you know what's at stake.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway.
No, it's really interesting to hear your take on this. So, we do have another caller. I'm just going to bring them on, just a moment here. 530, you're on the air. Oh, we had a problem before with 530. 530, we're having trouble hearing you. Can you hear us? Okay, you know what? I'm just going to pop you on hold, and we'll try you again in a little bit. Otherwise, they may just want to sit and listen. Okay, what I did want to know was how much you feel Josh suspected something may have been going on with Beth and Mick, you know, obviously, you know, more towards the beginning.
You're asking me whether how early he might have suspected things?
Yeah, and also, you know, did he suspect it was something romantic, or, you know, what was his whole take on their friendship?
Well, I think that Josh loved Beth more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes when you're in a relationship and you're really, truly, deeply, madly in love with somebody, sometimes you almost don't want to accept certain things.
Yeah.
He certainly wasn't an idiot. I think he knew something was up. When something's going on between your partner and somebody else, you know, you feel it. And when two people are in a room and there's chemistry or tension between them, you can feel it, particularly if you're in a relationship with one of those people. So I certainly think he knew something was up. He didn't necessarily know the extent of it early on, but as the show went on, I think it became more and more clear. And by, I think, about episode 5, when they have that conversation in the hallway, the one with the chicken comment that everyone loves to reference, you know, is really the first time that he makes it truly explicit to her that he knows that something's up. And he tells her that he saw the way they looked at each other.
Yeah.
And you know, he couldn't miss it. And he's not confrontational about it. He's not angry about it. He's just letting her know that he sees it. And, you know, she should know that he knows. But again, as you know, it's complicated. And as the show goes on, you know, he does have, you know, get a little angry, you know, but, you know, the height of it being, I think, around the following episode, episode 6, where he, you know, he sees her in the club with him. It was the one thing that he asked her not to do, and she does. And he, you know, that little flash of jealousy, I think, is real and very human. And it comes out then. But what I was getting at in the beginning was just that I think sometimes, you know, there's a conflict between, you know, our minds and our hearts. And I think towards the end, you know, in about episode 10, He's almost willing to say that, you know, he'll let it all go if she can just look him in the eye and tell him that, you know, she doesn't have feelings for him. Even though in his mind he knows that it's true, I think as long as she can tell him that, you know, he'll go along with it because he loves her that much.
Wow.
And sometimes we don't want to, you know, our heart tells us one thing and our minds tell us another. And I think that's what made Josh's struggle and Josh's story interesting, was that dynamic, that tension between what his mind told him was true and what his heart wanted to feel and believe was true.
Oh, I'm feeling terrible for him right now.
That was amazing. Anyway, but you know, those are the things that I thought about when I betrayed him. I mean, because those are the layers that I think make, you know, is what made him interesting. His story fit into the larger story.
Yeah, I think that was a conflict as well for people who are watching, because Josh is such a likable character and he's a good person. And we know that, you know, he loves Beth so much and that he would always be there for her and stand by her. So we've got the conflict of that. And then, of course, you know, there's Mick and he's, he's also trying to be a good person as well. And,
sure.
And of course, you know, he's got the whole vampire, you know, sexy thing going on.
Yeah, of course.
Wait.
That was the height of. I said this last week, but that was the height of Beth's conflict. Her dilemma was choosing between these two guys, and Mick was dangerous, and he was dangerous and sexy, but because he was the unknown, right?
Right.
He was also the unattainable, because it was impossible for them to be together. Versus the guy that was also good and was also, you know, loved her and wanted to protect her, mm-hmm. and all these things, but really his only limitations were that he was human,
right.
And that was something for which I don't think you could fault him. But when you were comparing the two of them, it was. Josh couldn't compete because he didn't have supernatural powers.
Right.
But it wasn't for him, you know, being some sort of bad guy or, you know, didn't treat her right or that kind of thing. He wanted to stand up for right and fight the bad guys and try and solve the crimes in the only way that he knew how, which was in a human way, you know. So that's what I think actually made her conflict interesting, is that It wasn't a no-brainer. It wasn't like, oh, this guy's a jerk and this guy's the, you know, sexy guy you want to run away with. It was actually, you know, a choice between what was real and what was potentially unreal.
Right.
And if that makes sense.
Oh, no, it does. Absolute sense. And what a dilemma.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, when that dilemma went away, I think it got caught kind of in a weird place.
Right.
Well,
that was the next question. It's like, okay, where does this go next, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's why people constantly are asking about the idea of, you know, what would have happened had Josh, you know, been turned into a vampire. Because, and that's what I was referencing before about all the possibilities it opens. Because, you know, who would Josh be? What would he be like? You know, what would happen? Would he be good or bad? Would he be a friend or foe to Mick? You know, where would that put Beth? All the things that could possibly unravel.
What kind of vampire would he be? And would Beth want him?
Exactly. Because what if Josh could protect her with the kind of supernatural power that Mick has been able to protect her
right.
with? I mean, what, because essentially, you know, it all came down to Beth at the kind of, I don't want to say Freudian level, but that core, you know, level was about her being saved as a child, right? Being protected by Mick. And she didn't know why she was drawn to him, but she was, and it was because, you know, she always felt safe around him because he had saved her.
And so
what if Josh could make her feel safe in the way that she felt safe with Mick? And that's, you know, that's kind of a really interesting question. You know, that would arise if they went that route.
Okay, we have more questions. Let me bring another caller on. All right. Okay, let's hope. Oh, there we go. 419.
Hi.
Who's this?
Hello.
This is Mariah. Hi. My name's Mariah. First, you got a great recall for the details of the episodes, which is great because I'm going to ask you a kind of specific question. In the final scene with the kiss with Beth, what was the direction for that, and what was your take on what going through, you know, Josh's head at that point in time?
Wow, it's really funny that you asked about that in particular, because that's actually a really interesting moment, at least for me, because, you know, and it's actually, it actually came across on screen a little different than the way in which it was shot. I don't know if you remember, but the way it happens on screen is, well, I'll start the other way. I'll start with how we shot it, and then and what I was feeling, and then what actually happened in the episode. Sorry, there's a car coming. I have to get out of the way. Hold on one second.
Don't die.
I'll try not to. Let's see if we can get across the street here. Sorry.
No worries.
So I think what that scene was about was that I think by about that point, I mean, the previous episode, you know, before she had gone to New York, I think it was, where where Josh says to her, he tries to break it off. He tries to end it, you know, and he says, this isn't working, you know, and she insists that, you know, she still insists that she's not, that it's just a case and that there's really nothing going on between them. And that's where he says, you know, just, you know, look me in the eye and tell me that you don't have feelings for him, and she can't do it. And, of course, it's interrupted by a knock at the door. But I think the following episode where her life had been threatened and, you know, he really felt like, you know, she was in danger, you know, he was going to do anything he could to protect her. And whether that meant, you know, getting off the case that he was on, he was willing to do whatever. And, you know, she implores him in that scene in the bathroom that he's got to stay on the case and that, you know, it's the right thing to do. And she kind of goes on that rant. And in that moment, he looks at her and he sees the person that he fell in love with, you know, and it's sort of a reignition, a spark of that fire that you once felt. And he's overwhelmed by that moment, and he kisses her, and he pulls back, she pulls back, and they look at each other. And the way we shot it, I don't know whether I'm supposed to say this or not. I suppose it's been a while. Doesn't matter. But the way we shot it was, you know, she pulls back and she looks at him, and then she leans in and she kisses him back, and it sort of grows in. It grows in mutual intensity as they, you know, push it up against the wall and, you know, into the love scene that, you know, you cut to the next morning. But the way it was actually cut in the episode is that he leans in and he kisses her and she pulls back, and then there's this jump cut to them kissing against the wall, and then another jump cut where they're pushing up against the wall again. And it changes the entire tone of the scene and actually changes the intent of the characters, because I think it that jump cut actually makes it look like, you know, it's more about him, you know, going after her than a sort of mutual rediscovery, mm-hmm. which to me, that's what the scene, that's the way it was written, and that's the way we actually played it, which was both of them feeling that rediscovery, both of them sort of rediscovering why they fell in love with each other in the first place. And so anyway, it was a really, we talked a lot about it, and it was a really, you know, it was a really interesting scene to shoot, you know, because it summed up a lot of their relationship and the getting back to what they had in the very beginning before all that has happened. Anyway, is that,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic answer. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Okay, well, I totally misinterpreted that scene then, because I thought it was completely a mutual thing.
Oh, you did? Well, no, I mean, yeah. that was how I approached it. That's how I felt
right.
about it.
It's just, you know,
I,
you know
Sophia
it was just,
would...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think Sophia was along, I don't want to speak for her, but I think we were sort of in agreement in that moment. It just, it wasn't the way it was cut. And ultimately, you know, the producers, the director, and more specifically the producers made that decision to tell the story that way. But it goes to show you the power of the medium of film, because you know we could be playing something a certain way, and through certain cutting and through certain editing, it can be changed, you know, or it can be shaped in a way that gives it different meaning, you know, and it's subtle, you know, those are just two little cuts, but it's a way of really kind of reshaping what the scene's about.
Actually, on the web chat, they're agreeing with you, saying it didn't look mutual at all. And I was thinking, when I watched it, that Beth looked as hot to trot as you did. It appeared that it was this discovery, and it was an awakening in her mind that, oh yeah, you know, after she'd been, you know, obsessing over Mick, all of a sudden it's, oh yeah, you know, and you both look hot for it. I'm sorry.
Well, I do think though, for her, I think that underneath it all was, I think it was she was feeling that and the conflict simultaneously.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And especially like the next morning, her guilt was a little more obvious.
It was pretty palpable. Yeah, it was pretty palpable. But you know, it's just that was how she saw it, was playing that conflict, which is she felt that rediscovery, but you know, she didn't know she didn't know what it meant. She didn't know, you know, whether it meant that they should get back together, or you know, although she still had all these feelings, you know, for Mick. So I think that both things were happening for her simultaneously. It's just the cutting made it a little bit more to me about the fact that she might feel it was wrong versus, you know, the rediscovery that I think we were both feeling, you know, the way we originally shot it.
Yeah. I think as well, I'm sure there are people listening who have been in this position when you're with, you know, the nice guy, the person who on paper appears to be the right guy,
mm-hmm.
and then this other different option appears, and, you know, you're conflicted. It's like, well, you know, I should be sticking with the right choice. You know, I definitely felt that for her. I was like, oh gosh, what a difficult thing. And there's always the pressure to be with, you know, the right guy, the nice guy. And I mean, one of her colleagues at work was like that, saying, you know, it's a year and you guys haven't even moved in together. You know, what's going on? So,
well, like I said, it's that conflict between your mind and your heart. You know, sometimes your mind tells you something is right and it's logical and this is what should happen, but your heart feels something else, and you know, which do you follow, you know?
Yeah.
If they're telling you different things,
and I know,
and maybe
go ahead.
No, I was just saying it maybe is true for her as it was for Josh, just
yeah,
a different way.
Now, how did Josh feel about Mick?
You know, Alex and I had certain conversations. We didn't talk too much about it, but I think that there was. I talked about this last week, so I hope I'm not repeating myself too much. But
no.
I think that they themselves, even though it was never on the surface in terms of what was portrayed in the show, you know, it wasn't out front. You know, what was going on between them. It was always under the surface. But I very much believe that there was a very specific narrative arc to their relationship as well, and it was subtle, but it was there. And you know, from the very beginning, where you know Josh doubts him, and he doesn't know who he is. He thinks he's on the run, you know, in episode 2, the very beginning of the show, and he doesn't, you know, he doubts him, but ultimately he ends up helping Mick. To, you know, hiring him on a job in episode 4, and starting to have questions about him in, you know, episodes 5 and 6, to discovering her, you know, him with Beth in the club, and arresting him, you know, sort of battling him for Beth's affections, to then putting himself aside to have Mick watch over her because he knows it's the best way to keep her safe,
yeah,
to the very end where, you know, Mick tries to save his life. So, I mean, there was an arc there. There was definitely a story there between the two of them. And I think that, you know, I don't think they disliked each other. I think that, you know, this was a triangle, a love triangle, if you will, between the three of them. And I think one of the things that Alex and I agreed upon was that under different circumstances, they probably could have been friends.
Right, exactly. What was interesting to me as well was some of the similarities that they shared.
Sure.
And that's what made it interesting for me. Obviously, yes, there were some differences, but there were some similarities, which just, I think, intensified the conflict for Beth. We do have another caller, so just bear with me here.
Sure.
You're on the air with Jordan Belfi.
Hi, this is Caroline.
Hey, Caroline, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing all right. What's going on?
Nothing much. I also have to say, I have to agree with an earlier caller that you have a really great grasp of the details. It's actually very impressive.
Well, thanks. I mean, those things are important to me in any sort of role that I take on. I think that that's what makes things, you know, that's what gives things life, you know, without sounding too precious about it. That's what makes things interesting. But thank you.
No, I really, you're welcome. I really agree, because it's very interesting to hear your sort of almost a deconstruction of the character, and then you have all the evidence to back it up. So you're going, oh, yeah, I remember that from the episode. I wanted to say, with regards to Josh and Mick, did Josh ever suspect that Mick was perhaps less than human or not exactly what he seemed to be?
You know, I can't say specifically. I can't point to anything that would lead me to believe that he had those suspicions. The only thing I can point to is, you know, there was one little moment I remember in episode 4 where he hires him to help find his witness. Josh hires him to help find his witness. And there's one brief moment where, he jumps off the fire escape, and all of a sudden he's down in the alley, and he's saying, oh, you know, she went this way. And Josh looks at him, and he's like, anyway. And it was just sort of a moment where it didn't quite make sense, how did he get all the way down there without, doesn't make any sense, but you know, I think that he was awfully good at his job, and he sometimes was able to figure certain things out that Josh didn't know how he figured out. But I don't know if there's anything specific that would have led him to believe vampire or supernatural or, you know, not human. I think had the story gone a slightly different way, and you know, Josh been around even longer, I think maybe that was a storyline that had the possibility of being explored, that maybe Josh did start to suspect something, you know. At the very beginning, Josh did notice she had kind of this new obsession with the gothic and with vampires, and I don't know if he necessarily connected it with Mick, but again, had Josh been around even longer in the show, I think maybe that was a possibility that he might start to wonder certain things. I think in the way that they kind of went that way with I'm blanking on the character's name, Talbot.
Yeah.
I mean, they were obviously doing that with Talbot. You know, he was really starting to clue into that, and I think that was something that could have been done with Josh, but you know, since they went the other way with Josh, they created a character that essentially filled the exact same role. No, I think he knew something was probably interesting or different or something that he couldn't quite put his finger on, but I don't know if he would have gotten as specific as to say vampire.
Okay.
Great question.
Thank you for that.
And Carolyn, yeah. Where are you calling from?
Australia.
Oh, okay, whereabouts?
Melbourne.
Cool.
Cool. I mean, it has already aired entirely in Australia, right? It's not still airing.
No, it has. They stopped around episode 8, so we had to be a bit creative with getting it.
They stopped around episode 8.
They pulled the series. Lovely Channel 9, and I will name the network. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Decided to pull it after the first 8. They didn't show the last 8.
Wow.
Isn't that terrible?
Yes.
I that's even less of a run than it had here in the United States. It's strange.
Yeah.
Completely.
It
wrong.
Is strange. Yeah.
Well,
I'm frustrating.
I'm amazed that you know as much as you know without having seen how did you get the last episode?
I have seen it. As I said, I had to get a bit creative with getting the last 8.
Visiting lots of questionable sites, I'm sure.
Yes, well, it was sort of a necessity.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome that you're able to see them all. And
oh,
I'm really glad that you like.
Well, my pleasure. And can I just ask briefly, have you heard anything about a DVD coming out?
I wish I had an answer for you, but I actually don't. I don't know. I would guess that they would probably release something. It seems like there would be too much interest for them to not do it. I mean, I know it's only one season, and actually less than a full season, but I think they probably have a sense that it would sell pretty well. So I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, but I don't know for sure, if or when it would happen.
Well, thank you for answering my multiple questions.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for calling.
Thanks so much for calling in from Australia.
You're welcome. See you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, that's so cool. Well, this has been so much fun. And you might be surprised to know that no other guest that we've had on either Moonlight Boswell Radio or Moonlight Radio has been grilled so intensely about their character as you have, which is actually a compliment to you.
Well, I take it as such. I definitely take it as such.
Because it's just so interesting to hear. I mean, Josh was such an interesting character to begin with, and then of course with the triangle and everything. But and also the fact that you have such great attention to detail and such great recall.
Well, thank you. That's what people really get excited by, and that's what people are interested in. And without it, I don't think it's hard to get engaged and invested in the characters.
Right.
So I take it as a huge, huge compliment that people are so interested, because, you know, it speaks to the fact that they were invested in those relationships.
Absolutely.
That's the most important part.
And I think I can say with a great deal of confidence that just about everyone in the chat room, and myself included, bawled our eyes out with that whole scene. Obviously, you know, the three of you being in that scene, being so present in it, was so poignant and amazing. And to see, you know, what was interesting as well was Mick's selflessness in that scene. I mean, there he was, you know, like just covered in blood, and there he is fighting to control his vampire urges, and there you are, and just the attention to detail that you had, when you're looking at Sapphire, and I've always wondered how difficult is it to play someone who is like either dying or is dead. Sorry, I just always wondered.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I can't say that it's easy or hard. I can only say that, I was just in the moment of what Josh was going through, and I think, you know, he was fighting for his life, but he was saying goodbye, you know, to the woman that he loved, and. You know, it was complicated at the end, and things between them were complicated and involved the guy who was trying to save his life. And I think that's what made the scene so powerful, is that the relate that triangle that you and I have been talking about, it all come to a head in that moment, in that scene. And that's what made it so interesting and you know, so ultimately heartbreaking, was that you know, these were the two guys who were fighting over this girl, and one is dying and one's trying to save the other, and you know, that's it's a dramatic situation, and it's so I can't say that it was I think sometimes when things feel right, when scenes are written well and material's good, it's not hard to play, because it almost you know, you're bringing it to life. You know, the words are there, and the situation is there, and that's the way it felt with that scene, was that it just needed to be brought to life. It was there, you know, and all the stuff that was going on between the three of us was there, and we just needed to play it.
Of course, and then of course we find out that he'd had his grandmother's ring like reset for Beth, and so obviously, you know, he's planning on asking her to marry him. It was just like, oh my goodness, it just made it all the worse.
Yeah, no, because it's that much more a display of how much he really loved her and was willing to put everything else aside to be with her. And that much more probably, I don't want to say guilt, but, you know, some inner conflict for her, knowing that, you know, she might not have been in love with him anymore, but, you know, he was willing to go, who knows, you know, but, it all put it in yet another context when you find that out.
Yeah. Now, I feel that the fourth character in that scene was the music by Trevor Morris.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel to have a piece of music written for a character that you played? I mean, it was called Saving Josh.
You know, I know, and I know that people have spoken about that particular theme, that particular piece of music amongst, you know, the fans and stuff. Mm. And but I utterly agree. When I heard it, I was really knocked out, because it hits all the right tones. It hits all the right moments. It's got all the right notes. And I really was knocked out by it, because it's not too much. It's, you know, it's not saccharine sweet. It's really emotional, and it's got sort of an epic sweep to it. And I just think it strikes the perfect emotional tone. And I know that episode, I mean, I felt really great in that. They really put a lot into that episode, and I do know that it was one of the first episodes, at least that I was told, that they did a scoring session on a stage with an orchestra. So it really had a sort of cinematic, epic sweep to it, and I think that's what people really respond to that, and I think that's what you're feeling with that.
Absolutely.
With that piece of music.
Yeah, it took us on a journey. And it carried us through the scene, and it really did have those emotional cues there, which really reinforced what was going on, and reinforced the depths of emotion that was occurring within the scene. And it just did it so effectively. And actually, Trevor Morris very kindly gave me permission to use that music in the opening and closing of my show, because it's my favorite piece of music from the show. So there you go.
It's
part of my show every week.
Well, I feel honored to be a part of that.
There you go.
It really is. I mean, it's like I said, it's big. It's cinematic, and it gave the episode a movie-like feel. It feels really, really big. From, you know, everything that's going on at the beginning of the episode, but when that kidnapping happens, and the chase, and then the final death scene. It feels bigger than you're used to on a network show, and I thought it was executed really, really well. And like I said, struck the perfect emotional tone. I felt also struck the episode as a whole struck the perfect balance between the supernatural and the sort of, you know, fun vampire aspects of the show, and the real world and reality. It was the perfect balance between those. Those two worlds collided, I think that's what made the show so that episode so powerful.
Yeah, and what was interesting is around that time as well, Trevor Morris actually received an Emmy, I believe it was, for because he did the theme music for The Tudors, which I think is a Showtime, you know, about Henry VIII as a young man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, they really compiled just a first-rate team from, you know, the set design, the costume, the makeup, everything. Just the attention to detail was just, you know, the actual, I don't want to say, is it cinematography? That's probably not the right word, right? But, you know, you get
absolutely.
What I'm saying. Yep, okay. All right, you have been so generous with your time with us. I have one more caller, and then we'll wrap things up. Is that okay?
No, it's totally fine. Totally
okay.
fine.
Okay, thank you so much. All right.
Of course.
One second here. Oh, now, of course, now we're starting to get the gremlins and have a switchboard issue. 203, you're on the line. 203,
hi, my name
here.
Is Lisa. And,
hello?
Hi, my name is Lisa, and I
hey,
wanted to say I am also very happy how you have such great detailed recall. It's just wonderful. And I just wanted to know if you frequent any of the fan boards, if you know what fans have been saying.
To be honest, I haven't of late. There were times when we were shooting that I would see certain bulletin boards and certain comments, about particular episodes, and I would get forwarded lots of stuff. But not lately. Is it still going on? Are the bulletin boards still being?
Oh yeah. There's still lots of fans out there, and we're still crazy.
Wow, that's really cool to hear. That's really cool to hear. Are there particular comments that you wanted to bring up?
No, I'm interested to know, you know, if actors really do frequent boards and you know, if they're interested in seeing what's written about them or the show.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't speak for anyone else. I know that there are probably actors who read them all the time, are on shows that people are writing comments about all the time. But for me personally, I don't like to read stuff as much, not because I'm not interested in what people have to say. I'm incredibly interested in people's response and their feelings. But I'm always wary of letting too much affect my performance and my take on things. And rightly or wrongly, I always a little nervous about reading too much because I don't want it to steer me in a direction that might not be true to the character and the telling of the story. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, so I fans really respond, negatively to this point or that point. I wouldn't want to change it because it might be right for the show, and those reactions might be appropriate and it might be the right thing for the show. So I love hearing how people are responding to the show and what they like and what they don't like and all those kinds of things. But while I'm working, I think that's why I'd be more likely actually to read them now than while I'm working. I think that's what it is. I think it's while I'm working is when I get a little nervous about reading too much. After something's completed, I'm always more than happy to look at stuff and talk about stuff because it's finished. It's a completed project, and that's why I'm more than happy and excited to talk to people now about everything.
Okay, well thank you very much, and you've gained a fan. I think you're wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you calling in.
Welcome.
Thanks for calling. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
Oh, that's been so interesting tonight, listening to the questions that fans have had.
and if
you're curious about some comments that have been made on the different boards, one that I can share with you, I posted the photo from your Facebook page when I was letting everyone know that you were going to be our guest. and along with a link to your Facebook. So the number one comment was, wow, he has such amazing eyes. So there you go. At the risk of embarrassing you, that was one of the comments on there. That was most commonly made. So,
wow.
So you have, through Moonlight, you've actually gained a whole new legion of fans. I'm sure people are going to be very interested to see and hear what you're up to next, obviously with Entourage, and hopefully, you know, if you join that off Broadway production that you had mentioned.
Sure.
And obviously we'll be looking on your Facebook page for updates to hear what you're doing next. So you will find that Moonlight fans are very loyal, and anyone who's been involved with Moonlight, we will follow in a good way.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful to hear. And I'll try and make sure all those updates are posted on that Facebook page. Actually, there's a project coming up. I don't know if anyone who's listening to your program is in the Los Angeles area, but there's a short project that I did with Rainn Wilson, who plays Dwight on The Office.
Okay.
The American version of The Office. Right. You and I did a project together, and that's going to be screening at both the LA Shorts Festival and the Palm Springs International Short Film Festival, and I'm going to be at both of those festivals. To support the film. So if anyone, you know, has any interest in coming out to see that short, they should enjoy it. But I'll be there at both of those events. The first one is this Saturday, actually, on the 16th. And the Palm Springs screening, I believe, is on the 22nd or 23rd. But anyway, those are two things that I'll be at coming up really soon.
Well, don't be alarmed if some fans come up to you and say, hi.
I'm more than happy to say hey and talk to anybody that that wanted to hang out.
Oh, that's fantastic. Just one final question, and I'll get in trouble if I don't ask. Gretchen was organizing the East Coast Moonlight Con. I believe she had spoken to you about it a couple of weeks ago, and she just wanted to double check if you had received the information by email.
This is the convention. Which one is this? This is the one where
North Carolina.
Yeah, all of that stuff. I think I've gotten all the. There's one in North Carolina, and there's one in the Midwest. It's not Chicago.
Schaumburg, Illinois, just outside Chicago.
In Illinois, yeah. So I think I've gotten all the details for both of those.
Cool.
And trying to work it out so I can be so I can do my best to be at both.
Okay, I have done my job. I have mentioned
you what?
I said I have done my job. I've mentioned it because they were asking in the web chat, and then they're saying, "Have you asked him yet?" So
yeah, no, it's just trying to figure it out schedule-wise with some of these other projects that are coming up. But know that I will absolutely do my best to be at both, trying to figure out in between shooting.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, and MJ's in the web chat. That's the birthday girl, and apparently she's completely smitten that you said happy birthday to her. So.
Well, everyone deserves to have happy birthday wishes on their birthday. Come on.
All right. Well, thank you so much again. We do appreciate the time you spent with us. You've been so generous with your time, and we will be eagerly awaiting your next project.
Thank you so much, and
oh,
thanks to everybody who called in and expressed all their excitement about the show. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks so much. You have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Thanks, Jordan. Good night. Okay, well, we've got just over a minute left, everyone. I just want to say thank you so much to Jordan Belfi for being such a wonderful and accommodating guest again. I hope that you were able to get... I hope you're able to get something more out of this. Obviously, for those of you who listen to our sister station, I hope you're able to get something over and above what you received last time. Not better, I just mean different. So please join us next week for Gideon Emery. And please also visit Moonlight Radio to check out what's coming up for them next. Thank you so much, and have a great evening, everyone. All right. Good night.